RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val, and...
It's Beans!
Yes.
Goodness. What a night last night.
What happened last night?
Really?
What?
You don't know?
What?
Oh, you can't know. Here we go.
Can't.
I'm going to play the clip.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe I do know. I don't just play. Yeah, I could play
you,
it.
You would know immediately if you knew. Here.
As to the political correctness, if I was worried about being politically correct, I wouldn't have joined this administration.
That's actually a good line, too. Okay.
Yeah. Well, as I made clear, I'm going to call him as I see him. And that's why I came in. I think I'm in a position to do that. There are two different things going on, Sean. One, I've said that the American people need to know what actually happened. We need to get the story of what happened in 2016 and 17 now out. That will be done. The second aspect of this is if people cross the line, if people involved in that activity violated the criminal law, they will be charged. And John Durham is an independent man, highly experienced, and his investigation is pursuing apace. There was some delay because of COVID, but I'm satisfied with the progress. And I've said there are going to be developments, significant developments, before the election, but we're not doing this on the election schedule. We're aware of the election. We're not going to do anything inappropriate before the election, but we're not being dictated to by this schedule. What's dictating the timing of this are developments in the case. And there will be developments. Is tomorrow there will be a development in the case. It's not an earth-shattering development, but it is an indication that things are moving along at the proper pace as dictated by the facts in this investigation.
Ah, yes, I did hear that.
How do you not know when I say last night then?
I don't know, Tracy. I'm burnt out. I can't wait for a couple of weeks off, to be honest.
Well, you're going
to
get them.
Yeah, seriously. It's funny because last night on my own show, I was talking about this very thing, you know. Well, here we have the month of September coming up. I feel like obviously they're not, as he just said, they're not taking any political considerations for what's coming forward. But September would be a prime month for some things to start being brought to the public and for some things to start really moving and shaking so that it would not be considered an October surprise, because that is usually purely political. So, I'm hoping and praying.
Well, I said today a couple things. One, John Solomon said after Labor Day, that was going to be when things really kicked off. He seems to be correct. Number two, I said, you know, this is really interesting for so many reasons. Now, we record the show at 10 in the morning. Who knows by 2:30 what's happened? So this might be moot. But, well, this point won't be moot. Whatever it is, we'll know what Bill Barr doesn't consider earth-shattering. So,
yeah. Oh.
If it's an indictment of some kind of like a Klein Smith or someone considered lower level, even though Klein Smith is not lower level, even if it's someone, something like that, we'll know where the bar is set. Someone just said that on my timeline. So great. We'll know where the bar is set for what significant developments would mean. So significant developments, as per Barr in that statement, don't mean something in a report. He's talking about action on criminals. He's not talking about, you know, some chapter in some book.
Yeah, you can definitely hear that there, too. And significant developments doesn't mean that, we've found a guy that did it, and now comes Kevin Kleinsmith in handcuffs. This seems like it's been going on too long, and there's too big of a staff working under and with John Durham and parallel investigations going on in places like Texas with John Bash. And I mean, so we've learned a lot over the last couple of months alone that just once again color in just how big of an operation this is. So whatever starts in September is not going to end anytime soon, which I would have to imagine, even though there's no political considerations being made here, Barr and the current administration need to have some sort of a level of confidence in their reelection chances, because if Barr's not going to be – if Barr's fired on January 21st, and there is – I don't know. I mean, that's – I'm just trying to think of what the hell – where the hell this is all going, and how much time is going to be needed, and how much time these people actually believe they have. And once again, they know more than we do, so I don't know.
Yeah, we – you know, just the little thread that we got from our person is doing very – it's standing the test of time. It really is. And I'm excited to see what happens. Listen, you know, clearly he's acknowledging there's been wrongdoing. And I hate when that happens. Hold on. I have my phone connected to my computer now. And it makes alerts every time my phone gets an alert of some kind. And my phone gets alerts every second. So I just had to shut that off. But,
okay.
You know, I completely forgot what I was saying.
You said the thread that our little friend gave us is still looking to be solid information.
Yes, and it's clear that Barr he says it very clearly. If somebody broke a criminal law, they will be charged. That's exactly what he said, and people are getting angry about it. And I'm like, I don't want someone that didn't break a criminal law to go to jail, like. If there is no law that somebody broke that they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt, why would we want someone to go to jail for that?
Right.
It you can't just say, well, Comey has to go to jail regardless of what. You can't do that. You can't. And I know it's frustrating because you think, you know, he broke this law. He broke that law. He broke this law. I'm sure there are several laws they found that he's broken. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're going to let Comey walk or blah, blah, blah. I think we're going to get some very high level indictments out of this case. I really do. I've maintained that the entire time without fail, because there's no other way for us to move forward if we don't. And I don't think that Barr or Trump or anyone else in the, you know, the just part of the Justice Department wants to see our rule of law fall to the ground and shatter into pieces.
Or at least the last vestiges of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I feel like most of what's going on right now is just to maintain the thread that we're dangling by.
Well, I mean, yes, because, you know, we've got all kinds of crap going on all over the country where justice is not being done. Like DAs are not prosecuting actual crimes while they're prosecuting things that aren't crimes, you know, all kinds of stuff. By the way, quickly, that DA in Georgia who charged that guy, that cop with murder for the death of the guy at the Wendy's.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his primary. He lost his election. I'm sorry.
Interesting.
So that might have been the nail in his otherwise corrupt coffin. So proverbial speaking, of course, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, this is just where we are right now. And I think a lot can be gleaned from what Barr said yesterday. And we'll have to wait and see. But I'm trying to like caution everybody. You know, he very clearly said it wasn't going to be earth-shattering. So when it isn't, don't lose your minds. You know,
it should just be considered finally maybe the first salvo in what we've been waiting for years.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, but he clearly said it's not an earth-shattering development. Listen, you can't. Listen, cherry pick some things out of what he said and not listen to other things. He clearly said it wasn't going to be earth shattering. I'm not sitting here with any expectation of what it is or isn't. I'm really not. I have no expectation. Whatever it is will surprise me, and or maybe it won't. I don't know. But I'm not setting myself up for some big, huge, you know, thing.
I'm not either.
By the way, on Celebrity... on Twitter, I'm looking and Chrissy Teigen is pregnant again.
What?
Yeah.
You think that was a rush job?
I don't know.
You think, quick, get me pregnant.
Well, she's got a bump, so it can't be that much of a rush job.
Jeez. Well, whatever. What? I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to come down. Not going to come down on her anymore as far as her looks goes. Very, very odd couple. They're very a very strange. Odd couple. Very strange.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Something going on there.
So we had a little development yesterday in the Seth Rich case against Fox.
Really? What is this? What happened?
It's interesting because, you know, it wasn't anything earth-shattering to me. It's just what people are saying to each other before this became a case. In other words, Fox News came out with that story about Seth Rich and how the FBI knew he talked to WikiLeaks. And there was a version of that story written that was, I guess, changed before it was published. And there's emails going back and forth between Ed Batowski and Fox about the story. And there's a letter that was filed because obviously they're in the discovery phase. And Fox is pushing back saying, well, this stuff is, you know, it's privileged, which is true. You can't. There's privileged information that you can't just share with. It's almost like attorney-client privilege when a journalist works with a source. So anyway, long story short, they ended up, it's this long, long letter about how it was all political to target, you know, the Democrats and Clinton, and the Fox was just running a political angle, political scheme with Ed Batowski. And, you know, that's what this was all about. And that's why they did the story to go up against which doesn't make any sense.
Has Ellen Ratner been brought up yet?
No.
You know, she's not a Republican. She's not an anti-Democrat. There's nothing political about her her part of the story, which is a pretty significant part of the story.
I agree. And there are a lot of people who are not Republican involved in this story, including Seth Rich.
Cy Hirsch.
Yes.
It does not have anything invested in Republicanism in a party sense, or Donald Trump, right? He has nothing invested in that either.
Correct.
I mean, this is, I don't know. This is just it, man. This is it.
The story that is in this email, or the emails themselves, I'll read really quickly. Greg Wilson, who's an editor, sent from his Optimum email, not his Fox News email. He says, Ed, this is the last version before we altered it to lead with the family's reaction. This has been purged from our system, but I still had it in my email. I hope all is well, and I'm sorry about how things worked out. I still believe we will be vindicated. And this was on June 9th, 2017. I don't know when the story was published, but the important sections of this are as follows. The whole story's in there. Again, they edited the story, but he wanted the original. It says, it starts, a federal investigator who reviewed an FBI forensic report generated within 96 hours after DNC staffer Seth Rich's murder and detailing the contents of Rich's computer said he made contact with WikiLeaks through Gavin McFadden, a now deceased American investigative reporter, documentary filmmaker, and director of WikiLeaks, who was living in London at the time. And then it goes on, the story. I'm suggesting, oops, where'd it go? Quote, I've seen and read the emails between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks, the federal investigator told Fox News, confirming the McFadden connection. He said the emails are in possession of the FBI, while the stalled case is in the hands of the Washington Police Department. The revelation is consistent with the findings of Rod Wheeler, a former D.C. homicide detective and Fox News contributor whose private investigation firm was hired by Rich's family to probe the case. Rich was shot from behind in the wee hours, but not robbed. And then it goes on to what Wheeler said. So Fox News is independently corroborating. So the whole thing was that Rod Wheeler told them about this FBI source, but apparently they spoke to the FBI source themselves and had literal numbers of how many hours between the time. This is all going to come out. It's all going to come out. I'm sure Fox News right now isn't so worried. I'm serious. They know the story's true, and they were pressured into retracting by very powerful people, and I'm hoping that they get their vindication in court.
Yeah, I will. I mean, if they get their vindication in court, I mean, this is the whole thing about this, is why I'm really surprised at how much I'm rooting for Fox News organization at this point, because out of all the ways that we thought we were going to get disclosure on this, I did not think it was going to be this. Although at first, and you dropping that date, June 2017, just remembering how much it was just so exciting back then. You know, everything was, we thought that there was going to be a hurricane of arrests back then, and everything was going to be developed
long ago.
And I know, seriously, because we're putting all this together, and Seth Rich, that whole story was really, really shocking because it still had so much validity back then. And now that we know so much more, the thing about this is, let's say they do get their vindication and Fox is vindicated for the reporting they did. All of this is put into perspective and all of this is validated. Yeah, Fox is able to get themselves off of a legal hook, but in doing so, they are casting such an amazingly tall, dark shadow over everything that was just done and played out before the public eye, including with the Russia investigation that didn't go from the real origin, the starting point of this. The fact that both parties are still highly reliant on this Russia hack nonsense.
Yeah.
This does so much more than just get Fox News off of a legal hook.
Right.
So like, what happens from there?
So the interesting thing about it all is in the letter, Frank, that the attorneys write, they say that because Ed Batowski is talking to Fox in other emails about how this blows up the entire Russian narrative, which it does, that means that it's just a political job. How dare they question that? You know, how dare they question whether or not Russia hacked the DNC? You know what I mean? Like,
nobody else has.
Well,
nobody. The investigators didn't even go check it out.
I know. The Hipsy didn't even. But I can't even say that because there are also emails in here included where they're looking, the Rich family. I think the Rich family's more probing to know how much people know than they are. Because they know. From everybody I've talked to who's worked on this, the Rich family, the mom and dad, know very well what happened. Very well. And that's been publicly spoken about, so it's nothing new for anybody. But there are emails between Wheeler and the committee and Kash Patel and Devin Nunes, and they're trying to get at their hands on that information. So Nunes and Patel took the information. They took the information about what happened. I don't know what happened with it or if it's in progress. Who knows? But they got this stuff. So they know somehow. I don't hear, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't hear Devin Nunes talking about how Russia hacked the DNC. He never says that, does he?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't remember. We're talking almost 4 years of sound bites at this point. I don't know. The one thing I do know is that there has been at least a responsible effort to never let go of the fact that there's always outside influence from both allies and former enemies and frenemies and all that stuff from around the world that are trying to either poke around and spy or place propaganda in news or plant false stories to whatever. So I know that there's always been that responsible take of, well, hey, the Russia has never not been some sort of a threat. So, but we're just, I don't know, exaggerating at this point, and we don't have any proof of the other stuff.
Yes. Yes. So this is, it's trudging along, and I'm watching it. I have an alert on it. I'm watching it to see what happens. There's going to be other discovery released, you know. I'm interested, you know, it's interesting how brazen they are that they think what they've just gotten on the court docket in public is a help to them. You know, they think this is going to once and for all prove that Fox was just politically motivated and slandering their son, when in actuality, it proves quite the opposite. And it's just the brazen and the hubris of these people, how brazen and hubris they are. It just blows my mind. Blows my mind.
I guess they're playing off of the same kind of stupidity that is allowing this Biden-Harris stuff to really go on. I don't know. I don't know. I just look at all this and I say, well, there must be a large amount of people that don't care, or they're hoping that there's a large amount of people that don't care, because there's a lot that doesn't matter. For you to say, I don't know how they can go out and have this stuff become public and still think that this vindicates them or exonerates one side or the other, and both sides will make a play that this helps their case, when it's so one-sided in this case on the
brain.
Yeah, in this particular case, it's so one-sided in the favor of Fox News. You really just have to be a numbskull, or you have to be involved and just don't want to be uncovered. I don't know what stake people, everyday people, believe that they have in these stories turning out one way or another. Well, none of us have any stake in it. We should really want this to be exposed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, even murder at this point is politicized. Sickening.
Yeah, man. Like what does the average American have to gain from all of this remaining a mystery? And it's largely a mystery.
Nothing.
Why? Yeah. Well, why are we being kept in the dark? That's whatever. That's just it.
That is just it. And I have a story, Frank, that I published. I think it was yesterday. I don't remember. No, it was late Wednesday night. It's about an election lawsuit that's going on here in South Carolina, but it has national sort of impact, and I want to talk about it. It's interesting. So in April of 2020, there were five plaintiffs that filed a lawsuit against five different defendants, including Governor McMaster and the Board of Elections and all kinds of other stuff, saying that the absentee voting rules disenfranchised voters, including African American voters, because they're more disproportionately affected by coronavirus. The NAACP is involved. The Republican Party is involved. It's a big lawsuit. Well, that lawsuit the judge ruled it moot because the legislature in South Carolina voted to remove this one provision, the witness signature provision of an absentee ballot here. There are certain criteria you have to fit into to be able to get an absentee ballot in South Carolina. They're pretty stringent, but it's not unreasonable. You have to either be at school, you have to be in the service, you have to be sick, you have to be on vacation or something. I don't know. There's all kinds of different things. But all of them require that somebody witness you signing your ballot so that they vouch saying it was that person that filled this out. And then they're on record with their signature as watching that ballot. So they can trace fraud, right?
Mm, right.
Okay. So
reasonable.
It is reasonable. So Henry McMaster, they're saying basically, since we have all, like, one guy, Jeremy Rutledge, he has an interesting sort of situation. He has systemic scleroderma, which is an autoimmune disorder that affects your skin and internal organs. And he has lung disease and he takes immunosuppressant medication. And he's saying that his wife's a teacher who's now having to go back and teach, that they're actually moving out and going to another house, and that he's going to be living alone, and he's strictly self-quarantining so that he doesn't encounter anybody else in his daily life that could get him sick because he's so at risk. In April, in May or something, the legislature in South Carolina ruled on this, and they actually removed the provision for witness signature for the primaries and had that legislation expire July 1st. So the plaintiffs in the case filed an amended complaint. And when they filed the amended complaint, a lot of the people that were on the original complaint, well, two of them dropped off. They weren't on it anymore. One of them was a woman who runs this 501c3 she's a doctor and her husband's a doctor, and she actually got COVID. And I guess they couldn't keep up the facade that she was afraid to leave her house because she's an activist. So they took her off. Just wait, it gets worse. You're going to lose your mind when you hear this. Long story short, the lawsuit's going on. Just a couple weeks ago, one of the other defendants I focused on, plaintiffs I focused on, Trina, what's her name? Trina. Come on. Sorry. It's Trina Walker. She dropped off the lawsuit too. But long story short, they did depositions in July of all these people and everything else. This guy is a pastor. Pastor Jeremy Rutledge, right? 49-year-old pastor in Mount Pleasant, which is Charleston, Democrat district now. Okay. He says in the complaint, he has strictly self-quarantined himself at his home with his wife and son since at least mid-March and does not anticipate that he will feel safe outside of his home until a vaccine or cure for the novel coronavirus and COVID-19 has been developed or found.
He doesn't feel safe leaving his house.
Yes. He says
until
there's a cure or a vaccine. He says in here, the complaint in the lawsuit, just understand how serious that is. Rutledge has arranged for his family to live elsewhere so that his wife and son return to work and school while he remains self-quarantined in their family home. He must therefore either vote in person or forego his right to vote in South Carolina elections. In the event that his wife and son return to work and school and he remains self-quarantined by himself in their family home, Rutledge will have no way to obtain a witness signature on an absentee ballot without putting himself in grave danger of severe illness.
Gotta be kidding me.
The problem is, if you take a look at the Facebook, right at the Facebook, Jeremy Rutledge says this on May 30th. On our way to our favorite birding spot this morning, we saw people who'd been stopped and were being questioned by police. We pulled over. I took out my phone. The boy took out his birding binoculars and we watched for 10 to 15 minutes until the police left. We waited until the black motorist climbed into their car and drove off safely. So you're birding on May 30th after you assert you're in strict quarantine. On June 6th, he took pictures of a defaced cemetery headstone in his neighborhood. On June 17th, he writes that he went 2 hours away in Columbia and then moved some sort of symbol of white supremacy, which he walked 2 blocks to Marion Square. He's traveling 2 hours for civil disobedience. Then on June 24th, he posted photos of himself in Charleston watching them take down another statue of Calhoun. So, Mr., I'm strictly self-quarantining and too deathly afraid for my life to leave my house is out all over South Carolina doing civil disobedience of no importance whatsoever.
This is why I said it doesn't matter with these people.
They don't care.
They don't care. They just don't care. Just like it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you look at this pairing of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It doesn't matter that in December she ended her own campaign because she was soundly rejected by voters. Now these commies are patting themselves on the back.
She's a pragmatic moderate.
Yeah, they're picking a woman of color for VP, the most useless job in American government.
Not in that administration.
It's historic. It's historic. It doesn't matter that the staple of her campaign was highlighting Biden's history of dishonesty and racism, or that she believed all of his molesters.
She was one of the only ones that said that.
Yeah, she believed all the women. Oh, I didn't say his molesters, the molestees. He believed all of the women who accused Biden of everything from inappropriate contact to outright molestation, but nobody cares. And they will say things. They will assert certain beliefs, and they will go off and do other things. They will throw themselves into the mix of some kind of a legal battle like this with absentee balloting and I'm quarantining, I'm setting my family away. And then they don't even have the self-control to not post on Facebook.
I know.
You would think that it's okay if I'm going to pull this off.
I got it, right.
They can't even stop themselves. There's no control.
Is a pastor.
Yeah, man. This is
Trina did the same thing. Trina is blind and legally blind, and she's, you know, it says she's followed social distancing and quarantine recommendations to the best of her ability and doesn't leave her home except when necessary to purchase food for herself and her children. Black people Ms. Walker has closely followed public health officials' specific recommendations to Black people and is particularly reluctant to leave her home because of the disproportionately harmful effects that COVID has already had on Black people. Ms. Walker expects she will not feel safe leaving her home until a vaccine against the virus is developed or a cure is identified. She is fearful that leaving her home will only become more dangerous as public officials ease social distancing restrictions before a vaccine or cure are available. Now, Trina, on June 19th, we're even later now, Trina shared photos and Facebook updates about her protesting activities, even though she asserted in the lawsuit she doesn't leave her home except to purchase food. She's on the street corner here with the sign protesting. Then she puts a status update. I'm on the corner of Rivers and Durant with a sign. I'm free to live in any community I choose. I will be dancing. Then she shares a picture of her kids out protesting with her. Then she shares a status update where she says this. This is the kicker. Listen to this one. My children have... Oh, that's not it. Hold on. My kids are eating Dunkin' Donuts and swimming in another community's pool. So you have your kids swimming in a community pool surrounded by people who could be infected with this deadly virus, and you're out protesting on the streets while they do it, but you're too afraid to go to the polls and vote. The kicker on this one, outside of that, she actually posts a status update where she talks about how she doesn't like the mask mandate and she's out at a restaurant. This is the best they can find.
Because, like I said, this is pretty much the equivalent of going to a casino, rolling up at the roulette table and placing chips on all different spots on the board.
And hoping one sticks.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if some bets actually run counter to other bets because they're insurance. You know, you look at this and you say, all right, well, why would she still be all in for, you know, what's all the voting stuff? Well, good voting. Obviously, there is a slant toward these progressive Democrat commies. That the chaos alone that the mail-in ballots are going to create is going to benefit them. It's either they can find a way to steer the entire thing and the totals to their favor, or there is going to be a narrative in there that could be seized upon to then contest the election for another 4 years, just like they did the prior 4 years. So they definitely have to put some chips on the mail-in ballots, and they have to put some chips on there. Everything else is just based on, well, wherever the president is standing, we'll stand on the opposite side. It doesn't matter if two of those stances will contradict each other. It just doesn't matter. They're not whole people. I'm W-H-O-L-E, not whole people. These are programs that are being run. These are programmable biocomputers that are running, and it's I don't know. It's like they got to be defragmented or something.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. The best thing about this too was that, like, there's a deposition attached in here. It's embedded inside the article, and if you read it, which is really interesting, the lawyers for the right, the Republicans, ask the pastor, hey, do you think, you know, when you're wife and son are not living with you for however extended period of time until we have a vaccine, do you think you'll ever lay eyes on them at all? Like, and he goes, why? I mean, yeah, we probably, you know, we'll see each other. And, you know, the guy goes, well, let's just say for argument's sake, you guys could meet at a park and maintain social distance. Would that be something that you would do? And he said, yeah, I could see us doing that so we can get some FaceTime. And then the guy goes to him, well, couldn't you technically bring your ballot with you to the park, lay it on a bench, walk away, and let her sign it for you?
No!
No!
He goes, I thought about that.
And I'm sure you did, sir. I'm sure you think about a lot.
So, I have absolutely
no... I do thinking from time to time.
No problem throwing Jeremy here under the bus because he's a horrible person. Horrible. Good. Jeremy Rutledge. He's on Twitter. His tweet is in the article if you guys want to pay a little visit to the article and take a look. So there's that. So this, I'm excited because I'm going on the radio in Myrtle Beach on Monday morning to talk about this. And that's going to be great. I'm excited to do that.
Whose show are you doing in Myrtle Beach?
It is, and I know the name. Hold on one second. I just don't want to get it wrong. Hold on. It's the Liz Callaway Show, which is a very popular show here in South Carolina in the Grand Strand area. Talk 945. It's 94.5 FM with Liz Callaway, and it's going to be fun. And I'm excited to talk to her about this because it's really important. So there's that. You okay?
Me? I'm fine. Yeah.
All right.
That's the boiler that just went on. I can't control that.
No, I get it. Frank is in his basement like Joe Biden.
Yeah. This is where I will be forever now.
He's working in his basement. So he had the dehumidifier on because New York basements are super muggy.
Yeah, yesterday was a very surprising day for me. It was a day that I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought that over the course of the first few months of Aurora being home, I thought that was going to be when I was going to slowly move my office down into the basement to start putting together her room. But all of a sudden, yesterday was the day that my entire life was moved into the basement.
Why yesterday?
My buddy Mike, he's off from work until Tuesday. He just took some time off and he wanted to come by to run Ethernet and do a few other things for me. Down here because we're prepping the basement for that eventually. And then we're just like, you know what? I finished writing the show. I had a couple of hours to spare and we just hauled ass. And now I'm sitting down here and it's really looking good. And the dehumidifier has made it nice. And I got an oscillating fan and there is one window that opens, but it's like a doldrum outside. And even though it's been years since I paid for the asbestos down here to be taken away and cleaned out, I should have just done a very basic air quality test first, and I didn't do it. And now I'm just thinking, what the hell? It was way too knee-jerk. I should have done an air quality test.
I'm really happy that you think that is too knee-jerk because you needed an air quality test. Because what happens if you don't? Like, for example, what happens if that air quality test comes back and they're like, you can never go downstairs again? What are you guys going to do?
Well, I mean, I just got myself a cheap little laptop so that I can do some work upstairs, especially at night, because I don't want to come running down to the basement at night to upload my podcast.
Quite scared?
No, it's just the basement's detached from the house. What? So I have to go outside, down a stairwell, especially in the winter.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's detached for it's whatever. So it has a separate outside entrance. So I was just thinking ahead for like winter or snowstorms. I just don't want to leave. I want to stay upstairs and be able to work on something. So there's way if they comes back and it says, well, there's mold in the air. We gotta do some work down there. Then at least I have an option. But I know that there's no asbestos, but it has been a little bit damp down here. So maybe there's mold. I don't know. This is the first time I'm thinking.
Well, at least we thought about it now. You could take care of it.
Yeah.
Take care of it.
Yeah.
So I have a clip to play and I don't know what it is. So we're just going to play it. But Ned Ryan, who I need to schedule, I need to schedule for the show. And I keep on, he shared it. It's Tucker Carlson and Dan Scavino put it out last night. So there is a guy named Richard Goodstein who's on with Tucker. Supposedly this is very funny. So let's see what it says.
That's what I asked Kamala.
Her name is pronounced comma, like the punctuation mark. Look, Kamala. Okay?
Kamala.
Out of respect for somebody who's going to be on the national ticket, pronouncing her name right is actually not, it's kind of a
so
bare
I'm disrespecting
Kamala.
Whatever.
Kamala.
No, because no, no, it's Kamala Harris. No, it's
whatever.
Kamala Harris. Kamala.
Tucker Carlson. The best he could do was to somehow mangle her name.
Kamala.
Just tell Kamala.
Kamala.
That is the whole point of Kamala.
Kamala.
Then at the end it's laughable because he's like
Kamala.
Or whatever. So it's like, no, it's not whatever.
That's what I asked Kamala.
No, it's not whatever.
Oh goodness.
Horror story. What a horror show this is.
For sure. For sure. I have other things. I have other things, but I got distracted. So Marjorie Taylor Greene won in Georgia.
Okay.
And she supposedly is a pro-Q candidate.
I heard about this.
And everybody is slandering her left and right, how she can't be a serious candidate. She can't be a serious... And the district went 70% to Trump. So it's pretty guaranteed she's going to win. And people are losing their minds. And I love it.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind one way or another. I want districts to just put who they want in there. And I want them to be enthusiastic about whatever they want and make their choices. And to be honest... there has the kind of crap that's being pushed from the establishment on both in both parties, the uniparty, what is being pushed, the crap and their media from Russia to Ukraine to the impeachment that followed and everything else. You know, the Q stuff really doesn't bother me that much. It really does. I heard people say that they don't like it because they think it's making people complacent. Honestly, if there's somebody, if somebody's out there doing, to, you know, they and they get into the House of Representatives and they actually have some sort of a fire behind them, they want to see some real things happen, and they're going to be bold enough to actually wield whatever influence that seat has to go and light a fire under some unsavory people's asses. I'm fine with it. I don't care where the hell they started off.
Shit's funny. Really, she says, I'm not going to D.C. to make any friends. I'm going to D.C. to help Donald Trump drain this corrupt swamp. And I'm going to be the strongest voice in Congress for the silent majority.
Well, hey, she's younger than Donald Trump is. She comes from a district that obviously votes very, very conservatively or intends to vote conservatively. I always say, you know, there are people who vote for Republicans for many, many years that just feel like the best shot that they have for even getting a little bit of what they wish the country was is going to come out of the Republican Party. It's not that they like the actual party's platform and what it stands for. So you look at a district like that that is obviously hungering for some kind of bold moves there. This is a woman that may be able to, you know, stay in Congress for years after Donald Trump is even gone. So I guess that in itself is just another little kind of a bellwether of how people are starting to, on local levels, be a little bit more selective of who goes off to Congress to represent their interests, because the old school is not cutting it anymore.
Here, listen to this commercial she put out 5 days ago.
I'm Marjorie Greene. I've never run for office before, but I've made all the right enemies. The fake news media hates me. Big tech censors me. The DC swamp fears me. And George Soros and the Democrats are trying to take me down. But they don't scare me. Socialism does. That's why I'm running and approve this message. President Trump needs bold, fearless allies as he fights to save America and stop socialism. Vote Tuesday. I'm
Marjorie Greene. And she won.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. She didn't say anything about QAnon.
No, isn't that amazing?
Talking about socialism. See, that's why I say I don't, you know, there are people who have dedicated a lot of their time to be either pro or against. And me, I just look at a very sleepy country, and I don't care how the hell people bring themselves to the table and get to the party. Just get to the party, because I'll tell you one thing. I got to the party through people like Alex Jones, and I don't even – I maybe go and visit Infowars.com 3 times a year now, okay? I didn't stay there. Just get to the party and you're going to, you know.
Do you know who G. Edward Griffin is?
Oh, yes.
How would you like to interview him on the podcast?
Oh, my God. I've owned Creature Jekyll Island for years. And he's actually one of those first door opener kind of guys. I found him through Alex Jones and InfoWars. And then from there, I found people like Gerald Celente Yeah, Griffin, that would be an amazing honor to speak with him.
Well, get your questions ready.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Get your questions ready, Frank, because he will be on the Dark to Light podcast in the next week or so.
Wow. All right. Great. Great. Gee, you know, that's going to be... I don't know. I haven't followed what he's doing lately and how he's. I have to go and look into what he's been doing lately as far as just current events. But for people that's going to be a little bit, that might be a stark kind of a show as far as looking at the reality of the financial system, how old and rickety it is, and what it's been based on from the get-go, and that we're really in the terminal phases of the central banking the system there. I would really be interested to see and what he feels maybe around the corner, what Trump's role in that is, because I know people like Peter Schiff have they're not very optimistic about much of anything. A change must come. So I'm curious into what he thinks.
For no other reason than, wasn't he the one that did that interview with that with what's his name, way back, the one that's made the rounds again lately with the Russian
Yuri Bezmenov.
Yeah, he's the one, I believe, who did the interview with him. I've bought Gio with Griffin lunch one day when we did Gigi, my good friend, did Save Long Island. He was a speaker at that, and I bought him his lunch that day, and we sat and talked for a while. Listen, there, his Wikipedia now says far-right conspiracy theorist.
Of course.
Of course.
Because he's a gold bug.
Well, listen, you need to – he's a voice that people need to hear right now. If you want to understand the Federal Reserve and all of that nonsense and so many other things, he's a voice that people need to hear from. And he's very – he's 80-something years old.
Wow, that'd be amazing.
But yeah, it'll happen. So it'll happen. I already have that confirmation. So I wanted to move into really quickly talking about conspiracy theorists and conspiracy theories. Drew Holden 360 on Twitter did a thread yesterday. By now, you've likely heard from the media that Kamala Harris recently named Biden's choice for VP as a moderate and a centrist. She's actually the most liberal senator in Congress, but that hasn't stopped the moderate myth narrative. And they label her on the ideology chart, and it is to the left of, like, it's bad. We'll start with yesterday's announcement, he says. What really got the narrative off to a strong start was the New York Times calling Harris a pragmatic moderate pick. Breaking news, Senator Kamala Harris of California is Joe Biden's pick for vice president. A pragmatic moderate, she is the first black woman on a major party ticket. And it wasn't just the kickoff. They followed up with more reporting of the pragmatic moderate fallacy, courtesy of two reporters, Katie Gluck and Alex Burns. They weren't alone. CNN going with the moderate designation. Senator Kamala Harris became the first black and South Asian American woman to run on a major political party's presidential ticket when Joe Biden named the moderate former prosecutor to be his running mate.
Wow.
Yeah. Speaking of a partisan talking point rather than something attempting to pass as real news, Stephanopoulos did the same thing.
Oh.
Yep. Kamala Harris comes from the middle of the road moderate wing of the Democrat Party. You see what they're trying to do? Their leftism doesn't sell to anybody with a brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why here it is. This is the just forget about all the burning and the looting and Black Lives Matter
and
going into the suburbs demanding that white people give up their homes. Forget about all that. We have a real moderate here. Thank God we have the moderates of the wing that are here. The moderate
and forget about Kamala Harris saying Medicare for all and that illegals should be able to come in here freely and all the things she said during the campaign to cater to those. The fact that she lied about when she smoked pot, the fact that she let pedophile priests walk free, you know, what she did to minorities, all of the things that she's done, the fact that she slept her way into her first position. Kamala Harris is widely considered a moderate Democrat, as per Christina Wilkie of CNBC. Reuters also. Why Kamala Harris? The Economic Times. A pragmatic moderate and one of Biden's former rivals in the presidential race, Harris was a barrier-breaking prosecutor before being elected to the Senate. Do you remember what she did to Kavanaugh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, she was almost as despicable as Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can top what that skeleton, that mummy did. But this is an inverse, and now I know this is really what they're going for. So I was waiting with bated breath to see who the real candidate was going to be. Now, I still don't believe that Joe Biden is the candidate for president in the long run, but he's definitely the candidate. I'm talking about he's definitely the candidate they're running in this election.
Oh, yes.
Once if he ever attains the office, he is not the long term. He's not the long term candidate. I think we might see the first resignation in a long time.
Here is the Daily Caller sharing a clip from Stelter a few days ago. Listen to this.
Sort of sharpened their teeth on Bill Clinton. This has been the way they've built audiences for three decades now.
Yeah, I don't want to claim it's new. I just am arguing that it's getting worse. It's getting more severe. Aaron, your view of this, you know, when you see entire media companies essentially exist to tear down Joe Biden, is there an equivalent to that on the left tearing down Trump?
There really isn't. And, you know, what I would say, it's really a diet of this type of information that a lot of these voters are getting. A lot of the voters that I talk to, I can, you know, when I interview them, I do hear them saying a lot of the talking points that sound very familiar from some of these shows, which I try to listen to.
Seriously?
I've heard this clip a couple of times and it never gets old.
Do we need to listen to the rest of it or is that the bulk?
No, that's the bulk.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's the bulk. And like I said, when I played it on my show a few days ago, when this started off, I was about ready to give Brian Stelter some credit for you know, setting up a really funny joke, you know, because thinking, okay, well, he's doing this in spite of himself, and maybe he's just acknowledging the gamesmanship that's going on right now, because obviously he knows his entire existence is dedicated to hyper-analyzing every pause in a sentence that Donald Trump delivers. Every pause. They overanalyze everything and they criticize everything. So you'd think that it was just going to be some kind of a rhetorical question that the woman who was answering it would say, touche, Brian. But she said, honestly, no. And with all seriousness.
Yeah, she was definitely serious.
Just all I would say is apply everything that we were saying before about they're not whole people. Just apply everything before we were saying about the stances they take, the contradictions, and how the contradictions don't matter. Just keep walking. Progressivism is about keep walking in one direction, never look back, never look anywhere. Just keep walking. That's it.
We're going to end in a second. I don't want to get into another topic. We only have a few minutes, but I just wanted to end with this. This is from Mark Dice. I don't know if you heard this, but it's the true story of CNN's Brian Stelter. Would you like to hear it?
Please.
Quite a ridiculous. It's very important that everybody understands.
I was just channel surfing one Sunday morning and I happened to come across this strange character.
It says Mark Dice discovered Brian Stelter.
These animated facial expressions, hyperventilating over President Trump's tweets. And I thought it's probably just a rerun of Saturday Night Live from the night before. But it was Brian Stelter on this weekend show nobody had ever heard of, unironically called Reliable Sources.
I don't think CNN is, or any other channel right now, is anti-Trump. What we are seeing are journalists trying to stand up for truth and decency. And when President Trump gives an inspiring speech, we do say so.
But the problem was nobody was watching. I just found it by accident. And he had been struggling for years and literally dreaming since he was a kid of being a TV star.
Even when I was growing up, I was interested in being on television. I would practice, pretend to be a television anchor in the basement. But
he ended up working for CNN.
Sometimes I still marvel that they allow me on television. Do you feel that my style is wrong or my substance is wrong?
I think it's, and I mean this with truly no disrespect, but I think you can border on being sort of quite a ridiculous figure.
And that's really when I had the idea. Being a big YouTube star myself and a best-selling author, I felt like I needed to give back. And I decided to introduce Brian to America. And the rest is history.
Brian Stelter. Every time I see him, I hear Mark Dice. That's all I can say. That's all I can say.
Here's that weird little guy on CNN. I'm gonna steal Mark Dice, but you know, Brian's sitting there doing reliable sources.
You know what? He doesn't respect the office at all. I just can't believe it.
This little Brian Stelter.
CNN's Brian Stelter, that little pipsqueak.
He pretends that he did it all on his own and he didn't need my help, but he knows that, you know, I made him a star. I discovered little Brian.
I did a breakdown of the four faces that Brian Stelter that they market of Brian Stelter.
You did?
Oh yeah.
Where?
I did a break. It was in the opening of Wednesday night's show.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's in the first 15 minutes. It's I think it's good. I'm going to make a highlight of that. Because he's, like you say, he's very, very, very odd and awkward guy. He doesn't have he certainly doesn't have a face for television. He doesn't have a voice for media, period. But when they try to market him, the marketing filter is so, so awkward because he has this smile that makes him look worse. So they try all these different types of glares, and they try the serious face Brian and all these different types of angles on him. And it's just so funny and laughable. And he's a horrible person.
He's
so
a potato.
I don't care what I say. I don't care what I say. You know, you just put yourself out there and you show yourself to be what you are, a horrible person. And you gaslight whoever's watching you. You're attempting to gaslight a nation.
They know they're doing it too. I'm long past the point of saying they don't know what they're doing.
They know exactly. They and at this point, even if they had a change of heart in their gut and they're like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. Even if they said, I can't do this anymore, deep down inside, they can't. They can't stop now. There's too much invested. They'll lose whatever audience they have left, because then all of a sudden they'll start pissing off people at home that I can't believe that I'm invested this much in it. I can't go back.
Hold on. The Streisand effect. I mean, this is like ridiculous speaking here. Here.
Trust. The people who believe in this have a serious mistrust of our institutions and political systems. The people who believe in this think that U.S. intelligence agencies and America's cultural elite are working together in some diabolical plot to ruin the world, and that there's a secret savior named Q who's trying to stop them and needs their help.
What's in this worldview, there are pedophiles and Illuminati and just generally bad people everywhere, but they're hiding in plain sight, secretly pulling the strings.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. They are.
Seriously.
They are. Here's the thing. Q, I know that they're packaging this up in Q wrapping paper, but this is just it. I mean, maybe Q is the latest injection point that they're trying to focus on and isolate, compartmentalize, and destroy. But stop this.
Wait, let me keep playing it, because just wait, it gets better. I just saw this come up on my feed here.
Believers of QAnon, as it's called, have staked out a corner of the internet where many of their wild and substantiated claims have flourished. Confusing things, they sometimes use very real hashtags like Save the Children, and many of them truly think certain celebrities and major U.S. companies are part of some worldwide sex trafficking ring.
QAnon is convinced of is that they alone can find them. They have the capability, and that's what they are going to do. That's where the conspiracy theory part gets really dangerous.
They have a new champion in Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has upset the Republican establishment by winning her primary for a seat in the U.S. House, representing Georgia's 14th congressional district.
Q is a patriot.
This is Greene in 2017, talking about the movement's mysterious leader named Q.
He is someone that is very much loves his country, and he's on the same page as us, and he is very pro-Trump.
The FBI says QAnon and their many conspiracy theories are a potential domestic terrorism threat. The North Carolina man who shot up this D.C. pizza restaurant looking for non-existent pedophiles believed in similar theories.
It wasn't Q. Q didn't even exist then.
That was a year and a half later.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Here, wait.
Leaders on the right have distanced themselves from Green. But after her victory this week, President Trump shared his congratulations to future Republican star Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Damn right.
She isn't alone. A small but growing number of Republican candidates who've won their primaries share some of these beliefs.
QAnon fans.
Whatever. Let me just say something real quick. Whatever QAnon is, you have created grassroots congressional members.
Well, let me tell you something else there too, and this is why I kind of laugh, and I, you know, for the principle of all this stuff, which is corruption, which is the depth to where the corruption leads, all these things. First of all, the Pizzagate, the shooting at that at Comet Ping Pong or whatever it was. That's something even more.
You mean the shooting where that bullet just happened to go through the hard drive of a computer in the back? Oh, that shooting.
One shot kill. That's it. One shot kill right through the computer in the pizzeria that has no basement, even though the basement's been referenced to in past interviews with
Frank
Alifantis.
You're going to get us banned from every social media platform known to man.
I know. Just little tiny little breadcrumb for you.
Don't talk about these things.
But what I will say is this, whereas I'm never going to be a person that says I'm part of a something movement, I keep an eye out and I read. The one thing I will say is this, we have people in the media that have gone over the top in branding four congresswomen and possibly a fifth now coming out of Missouri as the squad. And the squad is a group of people who are out there. They should be called the South African Genocide Caucus is what they should be. Okay? Because you want to talk about what they're pushing. They're pushing the dismantle. These are four women that have taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States.
That want to destroy the country,
That want to dismantle the political system and the economy, and it's all through race, the guise of critical race theory. So they treat the oath that they take to the Constitution as the iTunes user agreement, and they just say, okay, yeah, fine. Can I have my six-figure salary now? And that's fine. But of course, if anybody starts questioning how bad the collusion of those around the world who have really sick spiritual basis for doing things, sick economic basis for doing things, that they would work together for mutual benefit, even though it's not for the benefit of us, anybody that comes to the table to start talking about that, we need to figure out how they got this information, how they got these unsubstantiated, damaging theories. Let's talk about critical race theory at the Smithsonian instead.
There's 50 seconds of this left. I just think we need to finish. Hold on.
All right.
Or at least they act as though they believe that Trump is the savior of the United States and that they are helping him overturn this deep state plot.
The movement's apparent followers started appearing at the president's rallies as early as 2018.
We don't exactly know who Q is, okay? Q is not one person, okay? Q is a bunch of people. They're on the inside. They're the good guys, and they know the real story.
Facebook says there are at least a million of these QAnon believers on their platform.
Like it's like a religion or something.
Yeah.
I can't.
Meanwhile, every last issue that these platforms push, these networks push, is whittled down to whether or not you're a believer or a denier. Climate change, vaccines, everything is believer denier for them. This is why I'm not standing on one side or another and being definitive about anything. But the fact that they are covering anything and looking at it and wondering whether or not this is a religious kind of a movement when they're the most religious people on earth is just hilarious to me.
I have said my piece about this on Twitter. I'm not saying anything else about it in terms of what I think about it or anything else, but this is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So this is what we're going to hear over and over and over again until the election. It's like people who had no idea what this was are going to start to try to look to see what it is. and they're inadvertently creating a, I mean, look at how many people have latched onto this over the course of the past couple years. They're creating millions more. I mean, they're screwing themselves, because once people see the way the information is presented, they're going to be like, this is interesting.
Well, hey, you know what? Very, very, very. Let's get even more basic with this. Look at this district that put her into, that is probably going to put her in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, she beat an incumbent. Yeah.
This is what I was talking about, even on a larger scale, on a Senate level, places like Utah. I'm saying, Utah, you have a strong majority in the state. Why aren't you being more bold with your picks? Do just send somebody out there that is willing to stand firm and say, no, the Constitution is what it is. We are going to start interpreting it, and we're going to start not interpreting it, applying it as it's written, and we're going to start restoring the natural balance of things between the federal government, state government, and trying to make people free again. If you come from a district that is reliably blue or red, why are you playing it safe?
Yeah.
Why is anybody playing it safe anymore? Just do. It's such a dire moment of action. Just do anything different.
That's it for. We went 5 minutes over. We gave people a treat.
Yeah, man.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val. And...
It's me, Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, RadioInfluence.com, and Spotify. We'll see you on Monday.
Later.
This is a Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
So when did you first discover your love of cooking? Was it before or after the military? Or just...
I don't know. I think it was at birth.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was always hungry. Yeah. I just love to eat. To where I wanted to take it to the next level where, again, my mental disability was all over the place. So the only thing... that really calmed me was Anthony Bourdain. Out of all the years, you know, in football. But Anthony Bourdain was the guiding light for me in the dark. You know, rest in peace, chef. But his cooking show would take me outside of almost like an out-of-body experience to where he would be traveling all over the world and, you know, just talking shit. And he was keeping it as real as possible and organic. And I loved that. And then as soon as his show would end, you know, I would fall back into my depression, and then it just dawned on me. I'm like, I was always cooking for everybody anyway. And that was the only time I really had true peace. I could create things because I was always watching TV. My brother's in the movie industry. I was always going to Hollywood sets, Hollywood parties with him. And I didn't really care who was there. You know, hey, Puff, you know, hey, Tyra Banks. I want to see what they are eating because I know I can do that. But I just didn't. I mean, you can't get that experience in a classroom. No, I didn't get the opportunity to go to culinary school. In fact, over $64,000 was written off for student loans because of my disability. I was told to file for disability, and I was denied twice, which took approximately 3 years out of my life. I was granted forgiveness, but the flip side to that is you can never apply for another student loan. If you do, then that original $64,000 would be reinstated.
Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.